All right. So this is going to be my last talk on this topic of differential function spaces and that. And I'm going to change next time and talk about probably elliptic cohomology and topological modular forms. And depending how the time goes, I might give a talk on some methods of computing twisted K groups, since that seems to have come up some in the physics literature. So I just want to kind of put this last picture together about these field theories, these topological field theories you can get using the methods of differential function spaces. So last time I ended with a motivational example. Last time I ended by just reminding you that the spin C Dirac operator gives me three-dimensional and five-dimensional topological field theories. And one way or another, they're derived from the formula, well, in the three-dimensional case, that c squared over 8 minus p1 over 24 is an integer on a spin C four manifold, and so this is integrated over a four-dimensional spin C manifold, and in the five-dimensional case, the analogous thing was that integrating over a six-dimensional spin C manifold of C cubed minus P1 C over 48 was also an integer. And these are explained, of course, by index theory, but and we were able to, and the geometry here lets you build three-dimensional and five-dimensional topological field theories out of these terms. So what I want to talk about today is how to generalize this to higher dimensions in the absence of this geometric theory. So we have to do two things. We have to explain the fact that these are integers by some other means, and we have to interpret them. We have to find a topological interpretation of these expressions. So, so that's going to be my goal. And we'll see in the end that this is basically, given this theory of, just given some algebraic topology and this theory of differential function spaces, these reduce to more or less pure algebra. And nevertheless, you get the same geometric output that you do in these cases built out of the spin C Dirac operator. Just because of questions physicists have asked me. But so the interest was to generalize this one to a six-dimensional theory, and this one to a five-dimensional theory, and this one to 11 dimensions. All right, let me just say a quick word. There's two directions you can generalize this. You can look at the higher terms, and so I also would have a seven-dimensional theory that starts out looking like c to the fourth over some number. This is a power of 2 times 3 factorial, and the next one is a power of 2 times 4 factorial. I have all those theories coming out of the Dirac operator, and I could try to, where C is the first Chern class of the spin C structure, and the goal is to generalize those to the cases where C corresponds to some kind of higher cohomology class. I don't know if that answered your question, Mike, but going. Yeah, I have to generalize spin C structure. We'll see. It's something rather old in topology, but yeah, we have to generalize spin C structure. I guess I'll come back to it. But to go further, so this goes on. You know, I can look, like I said, at this expression over 8, 10, etc., and I get something that looks like c to the n over a power of 2 times n factorial. And in principle, you ought to be able to generalize all of those to higher dimensions, but it involves some computations in topology that I don't quite know how to do. They're computations about the stable homotopy groups of Eilenberg-MacLane spaces. And if you think about it, Eilenberg-MacLane spaces are built so that they don't have any homotopy groups. So their stable homotopy groups have to encode every possible universal relation that they could. They're maximally bad. I think of computing stable homotopy of Eilenberg-MacLane spaces as being like, you know, assigned prisoner transfer duty to Hannibal Lecter. You know that if anything can go wrong, it's gonna, and it does. So I'll indicate some of the computations I've done to try to generalize this, but there's a, in the case when C corresponds to a four-dimensional cohomology class, I can do this story out to x to the fifth over 5 factorial, c to the fifth over 5 factorial, but I don't know how to go beyond that. But, you know, I don't also don't know of any particular interest in those cases yet. Okay, so I have to explain a few more. I mean, we're trading in all the beautiful geometry we have here on some more sophisticated topology. So I have to spend a little time setting up a little bit more topology. And I need to introduce the notion of a spectrum in the sense of algebraic topology. So a spectrum is a collection, usually denoted by a symbol E, and it stands for a collection of spaces, En, together with homotopy equivalences from En into the loop space of En plus 1. Let's write that as Tn. And we might as well suppose n is an integer, but if I'm going to specify a spectrum, once I've told you the nth space, I could just take the lower spaces, the values, the mth space where m is smaller than n, to be the iterated loop spaces of the nth space. So I just need to specify these for a sequence of sufficiently large integers, and I get them for all n in Z. There's various conventions in the literature and topology about what this should mean. Sometimes this is taken to be a homeomorphism, sometimes a homotopy equivalence. If you're going to do anything that really stresses the foundations of the theory of spectra, you want to take this to be a homeomorphism. But that gets into a technical level I don't want to get into. But for our purposes, we'll suppose this is a homotopy equivalence. So this is just the kind of data I need to get a generalized cohomology theory. So if X is a space, then defining E upper N of X to be homotopy classes of maps from X into En gives me a cohomology theory. And every cohomology theory comes up this way. And for practical purpose, you can imagine that spectra and cohomology theories are the same thing. That's also technically not quite true, but close enough to that you can think that way. What goes wrong is that there are maps between spectra that give you Let's just leave it at that. I won't say that. So anyway, this is the geometric data representing a spectrum. And one basic example to bear in mind is to take En to be the Eilenberg-MacLane space KAN. And then that's the spectrum representing ordinary cohomology. There are some other spectra that'll be important to us. And those are cobordism spectra. So let's see. Let's write BON for the classifying space for n-dimensional real vector bundles. And then there's a sequence BON going to BO n plus 1 going to and BO is the standard name for the union. And I'll write CN for the universal vector bundle over BON, and the standard notation is MON for the Thom complex. Now, the fact that the way these inclusions work, if I pull the universal bundle, the universal n plus one dimensional bundle back to this space, it becomes the universal n-dimensional bundle plus a trivial bundle. That's the definition of this inclusion. And so that gives me a map from the suspension of MON into MO n plus one. Now, if I think of that as a, if I think of fixing a point in here and running through the suspension coordinate, I can rewrite this as a map from MON into the loop space of MO n plus 1. This is the usual kind of a junction between Cartesian product and function spaces. In fact, back here in the definition of spectra, I could have, I could have given this same piece of structure as a map from S1 cross EN into EN plus 1 with certain properties. It's just cleaner to say what the properties are from this point of view. So I would give, let's call this map SN. Hannibal Lecter thing going on here with the. All right. Okay, so this map is not a homotopy equivalence, but you just go to the limit of all of these to make it one. So we define the spectrum MO by declaring the space MON to be. The limit as capital N goes to infinity of loops capital N MO capital N plus N. And similarly, if I had a, suppose I have some other space that classifies some kind of structures, like this might be the classifying space for spin structures on the universal vector bundle, or it might be it might be something more complicated. It might classify a spin structure together with a four-dimensional cocycle. Or this can be a very general kind of space. We'll just think of it as classifying some kind of structures. And among those structures is a vector bundle. It depends what you mean by simple, but the homology groups aren't going to be the same. Let's see. Let's just take n to be 0, in which case this one's a point. And if n is 1, that's RP infinity. Loops on RP infinity is 2 points, so they're different. But they become... Yeah, they're quite different. I think I can make this seem clearer in a minute. Let me just put up this minor variation, and I'll come back to this point, Greg, because I think it's there's a way to see why they shouldn't be the same geometrically. And so anyway, so suppose I have some other kind of space classifying some other kind of structure. And let's suppose even that this map has been set up so that it's a fibration, then we could define spaces B of N by pullback, and let me call this bundle chi N, and we can we define a spectrum again bn chi is again the same limit. And I think I accidentally, oh, I didn't. So this superscript notation, this means that's just another standard notation for the Tom complex. Bn plus capital N, sure. I lost you. I'm sorry. So let's think of this as being B spin, and this as being B spin N. Okay, but in general, we're going to need much more general thing. This classifies an n-dimensional vector bundle over this space, and I take its Tom complex. So, but this might be B spin cross KZ4, in which case I have a spin bundle with equipped with a four-dimensional co-cycle that isn't contributing to the bundle, but somehow is playing a role in the geometry. Okay, I don't want to dwell forever on this, but let me just point out that the that suppose I have a manifold. Let's just take this example. Suppose I have a smooth manifold S and a map into MON. Then this will have to, suppose this is compact, then that will factor through some finite stage of this system. So that will give me a map into loop capital N MO N plus capital N. And I can regard that as a map from RN cross S into MO N plus capital N. And as I discussed last time, we might as well assume that this is transverse to the zero section. So this data, in turn, corresponds to a manifold embedded in R n plus capital N cross S. And this has codimension, R capital N cross S. And this has to have codimension capital N plus little n. So you just think of that as a map of manifolds of relative dimension minus n, or codimension n, that comes equipped with an embedding into this large Euclidean space cross S. So at a given stage in this resolution, so by the time I take the limit, I'm taking the union over all possible embeddings, and the choice of embedding then falls away, and a map into this space can be thought of just as a map of manifolds of relative dimension minus n. So to address your question, Greg, the difference between one of these stages and the next is a choice of embedding in a big Euclidean space, and there's topological information left if I leave this value fixed in that space of embedding. So that's why it's sensitive to which one I'm at. Okay, so I'm sorry to belabor what's probably an old story about cobordism, but this is one of our ingredients. So these pictures I had of families of manifolds and everything moving through cobordism, they're kind of the standard package of the theory of Tom spectra. And this is a rough outline there. the other variation on this I need is this whole theory of differential function spaces. So I want to talk about differential cohomology groups. So remember, our differential function into a space require that we equip the space with a cocycle. So I need to talk about the cocycles on a spectrum. So again, let's suppose E is a spectrum. And let's now remember we could have written these maps like this, our structure maps. And so then I get a map of cochain complexes. Thank you, right. So now the cochain complexes of these spaces, En, are related. So there's a map, if I look at the cochains on En plus 1, I can map that to the cochains on this. And then I can take the slant product with the fundamental group of the circle, or integrate my cochains over the circle. And that'll give me cochains of degree 1 lower on En. So now I stick these together in an inverse system, and the cochain complex of a spectrum is just the inverse limit of the cochain complexes of the spaces under this system of maps. So this lets me define cochains, cocycles, the cohomology groups, all of that for a spectrum just as I would for a space. One important thing is that this grading, because these things are getting shifted, this star is now an element of Z. So spectra can have negative cohomology groups, unlike spaces. And I just, if this number is negative, I just think of it as, well, I mean, eventually I can add a large n to it, and this will be positive, and I will see, I'll see it as an actual cochain on an actual space. So those are cochains, and so a cocycle on a spectrum, that really corresponds to a compatible family of cocycles, iota n, in Z n plus k of En. But it's easier just to think of it as a single cocycle chosen somewhere. But by this definition, it's a compatible family of cocycles on each of the spaces. All right, just a little bit more of these abstract definitions. So I also have the homotopy groups of a spectrum. So pi k of E will mean pi n plus k of En for any n for which this makes sense. So these values are independent of n because these spaces are, as n varies, these spaces are just iterated loop spaces of each other. And this also makes sense for any k in Z. And now there's a basic fact about stable homotopy. And that is that the cohomology of a spectrum with, I'm going to take real coefficients, but it would have sufficed to take rational coefficients. But that's just the same as the homomorphisms from the homotopy groups of E into R. So for the world of spectra, homotopy and cohomology there's nothing like this could be true for spaces, but for spectra they're much closer in spirit. They're much, homotopy and homology are kind of more of an ilk in the world of spectra. Okay. So I could also, of course, write that as real vector space homomorphisms from the homotopy groups of E, tensor R into R. And now, So let me write, just to simplify notation, let's write V for the graded vector space pi star E tensor R. And so I have a canonical, now I hope this next variation I can just do without spelling out. I want to study cohomology with coefficients in a graded abelian group. And so we'll just think of the grading as being absorbed in the degree. So there's a canonical cohomology class in H0 of E with coefficients in V. So let's just remember that's HOM of pi star of E into V. And that's HOM, which is by construction pi star E tensor R into pi star of E tensor R. And I want, there's a canonical class in here corresponding to the identity map. And that's called the fundamental cohomology class. So we have to make a choice. In order to make our cohomology theories into differential cohomology theories, we have to make a choice. And we have to choose a cocycle representing the fundamental cohomology class. All right, and I'll use that cocycle. That'll be my reference cocycle, and we'll define differential cohomology groups. So now, if M is a manifold, we define the differential cohomology group En upper K of M to be, well, I would have taken it to be homotopy, without this N here, I would have taken it to be homotopy classes of maps from M into the kth space of E. But now I want to, right, so I, here there's an index which I have to remember for myself. But I have to allow this to be negative. So the way the indices work out, it's going to be pi capital N of the nth of the filtration in dimension k plus capital N minus N of E n plus k iota upper x. Where this iota, I didn't put the subscript here, but it stands for a cocycle on a spectrum is really a sequence of cocycles on each of the spaces, and I mean the one on that space. Okay, so I myself have to think through these indices and what all this means every time I do it, but it's rigged so that when E corresponded to ordinary cohomology, this really does just give you the Cheeger-Simons or Deline cohomology groups we talked about. But now you can see you can do this for any cohomology theory. X is M, I'm sorry, yeah. All right, and so this has all the properties of a cohomology theory, except it's not quite homotopy invariant in M, just like, and it remembers things like forms and certain tori. And I have all the, oh, I, that's a little bit complicated. I did it in the first talk. So let's, yeah, maybe take this as a black box. Oh boy. Okay, so these differential cohomology groups, they're like the Cheeger-Simons and Deline cohomology groups that I talked about before. So En upper K of M is just the ordinary kth cohomology group of M if K is greater than N. It's equal to E K minus 1 of M with coefficients in R mod Z when K is less than N. And then the interesting one, which is E N when these indices are the same, that sits in an exact sequence where the kernel is E n minus 1 of M tensor R mod Z, and the co-kernel is something I'll call A n E of M. And this is, I'll draw the picture in a minute, but it's, well, maybe I'll draw the picture now. It consists of an E cohomology class in M. Together with a form, a sequence of closed forms representing that cohomology class. So let me write this as a form, a closed form on M with values in V of total degree N. Remember, V was pi star of E tensor R. So this is a graded vector space, and an N form with values in a vector space of degree 2 would be an N minus 2 form. So there's some, this is a very shorthand notation for a collection of forms all of different degrees, but they're the ones that would, I'm sorry. And this down here is H N of M with coefficients in V. And this map uses our fundamental co-cycle to define. Okay, well, anyway, without dwelling on this too much, these are combinations of closed forms on M whose periods are governed by the integrality properties of E. And these are, you should just think of as some kind of flat differential cohomology classes. But this, so the picture works just like in ordinary cohomology, but it's good for any cohomology theory. It's good for cobordism theories, and it's good for the cohomology theory I'm about to introduce, which is a very abstract theory, but quite convenient. So this is the last topological ingredient I have to put in, and then I can do all these field theories as I was talking about.
And,
well, no, because this is not a homotopy invariant. Well, I mean, again, I used the smooth structure on M to define these groups. So. Well, okay. I use them to define this, so. I don't know. I haven't thought about that. I don't know how. I haven't thought about that. I don't know. I definitely use the forms to. Okay, so the last thing is a kind of Grothendieck duality in homotopy theory. That the object and topology was constructed by Don Anderson, and it's usually called Anderson duality. So the Anderson dual. So this is really a kind of Grothendieck Serre dualizing thing, but dualizing object. But in topology, this particular one was considered by Anderson. In studying the universal coefficient sequence in K-theory, and it winds up getting this name in the literature on topology. To be fair, there isn't really a Grothendieck Serre duality for stable homotopy because it's not abelian enough, and so it really doesn't quite fall under the embrace of general Grothendieck Serre dualities. But it looks the same. So. let's remember the kind of data that we have. So we were looking, for instance, at spin C Bordism. And now I've told you what spectrum represents spin C Bordism. And if I go through this geometric interpretation, which is just Thom's interpretation, pi 4 of this is the cobordism group. Of four-dimensional spin C manifolds. And we had an expression that wasn't quite an integer. I mean, it didn't a priori turn out to be an integer, but when I integrated it over a spin C four manifold, it was an integer. So we integrated c squared over 8 minus p1 over 24, and we got an integer. And so that gave me a homomorphism from pi 4 of this to the integers. Now, there isn't much I can do with a homomorphism, but there would be a lot I could do with a map. And so I want to investigate some kind of structure that lets me replace a homomorphism like this with a map from one spectrum to another. And that's what this Anderson dualizing spectrum lets me do. So it's a... So there's a spectrum, which we usually call I tilde, and I can't give you a geometric interpretation of it, but I can tell you what it means to give a map into this spectrum. So homotopy classes of maps from E into the kth suspension of I tilde. If I have a spectrum, well, I'm using E over here. So suppose I have a spectrum Y, which is a collection of spaces YN. Then I could just re-index these spaces and get a new spectrum. And that's usually written as the suspension of Y. So that's going to be the collection of spaces YN plus K. So the, let me write, the nth space of that is just Y. N plus K. This is a formal maneuver, but it encodes the suspension isomorphism in cohomology. So I'm going to be all right. Let's just leave it like that. So homotopy classes of spectrum maps from E into this sits in a kind of universal coefficient sequence where the quotient group is Hom of pi K of E into Z. And the kernel group is x of pi k minus 1 of E into Z. So this splits, but not naturally. So it's kind of, that's what I'm telling you. I tilde is a spectrum, right, that with these properties, yeah. So to actually define it is a little bit tricky. Maybe I can just say, I'll just say a quick word about it.
So E itself is a spectrum.
Yeah.
So does it mean that the homotopy
classes? Oh, I'm sorry. I probably should have spelled that all out. But a spectrum is a collection of spaces with some maps between them. So a map of spectra is a collection of... Yeah, preserves the degree and then, exactly, yeah, and then homotopies and all that. So, well, maybe the simple thing to say is, if I consider the thing which associates to a space X, Hom of the stable homotopy groups of X into Q, that's a cohomology theory, because stable homotopy is a homology theory. Q is an injective abelian group, so Hom of it satisfies the Eilenberg-Steenrod axioms. So that's homotopy classes of maps from X into some spectrum, which we'll call IQ. And then I could do the same thing with Q mod Z here. And that gives me, that has to be maps into some spectrum which I could call IQ mod Z. So I'm defining these just by the Eilenberg-Steenrod axioms. And now the map from Q to Q mod Z gives me a map from IQ to IQ mod Z. And the fiber of that is I tilde. And this sequence is derived from the long exact sequence of this fibration. So listen, this is a completely abstract thing. I want to give you some low-dimensional geometric interpretations of this I tilde. But it's the topological version of a homomorphism of an integer-valued invariant. That's what I tilde is. And it's universal for that kind of thing. So let's see, if I take E to be the sphere, then I can write down the homotopy groups of this spectrum I tilde. So if I write down, if I make a little table with K and pi K of I tilde, then I find that if K is positive, I get 0. When k is 0, I have the integers. When k is negative 1, I get 0. When k is negative 2, I get z mod 2. When k is negative 3, I get z mod 2. When k is negative 4, I get z mod 24. And in general, down here, I get the Pontryagin dual of one of the stable homotopy groups of spheres. So I won't continue this list down. I wish I could, but I don't know all the homotopy groups of spheres. Probably much lower than the basement of the building. Okay, so this actually lets me tell you some interpretations of things. So let me now consider differential I tilde cohomology. And we find that I tilde upper 1 of x of a manifold, I tilde 1, 1 of M is just the smooth maps from M into the circle, which actually does visibly depend on the smooth structure. So, and that's just because if I'm looking at the first cohomology, I'm only going to encounter these homotopy groups, so it looks like the Eilenberg-MacLane space, KZ1. When I go down to look at I tilde 2 upper 2 of M, well, now I have an element in H2 with integer coefficients and an element in H0 with Z2 coefficients, but I happen to know that there's a non-trivial K invariant connecting these in the topology, and this is exactly the K invariant I talked about last time. So this is the category of graded, these are isomorphism classes of graded Hermitian lines, Hermitian line bundles, or graded U1 bundles, I'm sorry, with connection on M. And you can interpret I tilde 3, 3 of M in a variety of ways. It's some kind of graded gerbs with connection. It also classifies bundles of graded Z2 graded central simple algebras over M. There's a variety of interpretations for what this classifies. So it's approximately just this usual notion of gerb, but augmented by a couple of discrete pieces of information. So the gerb has to be, there's two isomorphism classes of these gerbs over a point, just like there's two stable isomorphism classes of central simple algebras, Z2 graded algebras over C. And anyway, this also corresponds to some other kind of grading. So it's like I said, like the usual story with functions to a circle, Hermitian lines, and something else. But the topology is insisting on graded lines at this point and some other information. So this one, there's a variety of interpretations. I wish I understood what this one was. This ZMod 24 is pretty interesting in topology, and it's classifying some kind of higher graded gerb, some kind of higher object, of which over a point there are 24 isomorphism classes. I don't know what that is, but anyway, it's all right. So that said, I can't tell you in general what I tilde is, but you can see that down in low dimensions, the differential I cohomology groups are a lot like the differential cohomology groups. But they're remembering just the kind of information we wanted to remember, namely graded U1 bundles with connection and smooth maps into the circle, but in particular graded bundles. Yes. This one's pointing to the place in the Kunneth filtration. No, this one's... Right, so just I tilde upper 2 of M, that would be homotopy classes of maps from M into the space I call I tilde 2. And that space has... its homotopy groups are... remember, the homotopy groups of the second space are the same as the homotopy groups of the spectrum shifted by 2, by definition, right? So pi k of I 2 is pi k minus 2 of I, just by definition of the spectrum homotopy groups. And so I'm encountering two homotopy groups. I have a Z in dimension 2 and a Z2 in dimension 0. So this second space is Z2 cross CP infinity, and homotopy classes of maps into it is... I feel like I'm not answering the question you asked.
I think some of your notation is about how much of the form is in the simplex direction.
Right, that's...
That's
the one in parentheses, right. Do I still have the...
No, the reason what you're just writing, I...
Yeah, this is supposed to be a special case of this general notation here. Right, so the thing in the parentheses is the index having to do with the Kunneth component of the form, is the cohomological, right. And the only thing that isn't topological is when you're in the diagonal.
Oh, that's why you're showing us the diagonal.
Right, see, these other groups are just topological groups, but this is the one that's the most, that's the non-topological one. Well,
what's your favorite?
I think my favorite one I don't really know how to do, because I don't know how to, as we talked about yesterday, I don't know how to do the case where I get anything more than torsion cohomology classes. But so this space was studied, not in this language, by Donovan and Karubi, and I think it must have been Terry Wall, under the name the graded Brouwer group. So this certainly contains the group of bundles of algebras over M. These algebras are simple algebras with center the complex numbers, and they're graded. And I think that if I want them to be finite dimensional, I don't get all of this. I just get the torsion classes in here. But I also think that this Dismier-Duati, story would let me do all the non-torsion classes. But Pete, as we talked about yesterday, I don't quite know how to do that. So I put these dots in because I think there are kind of in play potential. Maybe I should have said there are a lot of approximate interpretations of this. And here I'm really at C, and I don't want to be at C because I have a lot of reasons why I want to bring this group into the story. I'm in danger of going into a long injury period in this soccer match here, so I better get back to the... Did I answer your question? And Mike, that's cool? Okay. All right. Let me just make the point, though, that... I mean, in a way, this is one of the points I've been leading up to, that, you know, this expression on a four-dimensional spin manifold it didn't quite have to do with integer cohomology. I can't explain it with integer cohomology because these aren't integer classes. They just happen to be by the time I'm done integrating them over a spin manifold. But what topology is telling you to look at then in the end isn't an integer cohomology class, but rather a map from the spin Bordism spectrum into this I tilde. So that's the and then this geometric interpretation of these low groups tells me that out of such a map I will still get the kind of data that go into a topological field theory. So I'd get smooth maps into U1 or graded line bundles. And I get this whole field theory story, but not using Cheeger-Simon's differential characters, but rather elements in these mysterious generalized differential cohomology groups. Okay. All right. So that said, let me just tell you the general deal. So and then I'll illustrate it in the cases of interest. So the sort of vague general story we need some kind of cobordism theory, so let's write this as MG. Just a notation I just made up this second. So this will be some cobordism theory classifying some kind of structures, which I call G on manifolds. So I might think of this as spin cobordism, but there are many other elaborate things I could attach to spin cobordism. And the general story is to take some kind of miraculous integer invariant. So we'll search for an integer invariant of d-dimensional manifolds of this kind. So d-dimensional G manifolds. And now I need to refine that. So that's a homomorphism from pi d of M G into Z. So that's K is D, that's a homomorphism from some homotopy group into D, and I need to refine that to a map into I tilde. So we refine this to from M like this. Now, let's look back at this sequence here. If this group here is zero, then there is only one way to refine this. So if it just so happens that the cobordism group of D minus 1 manifolds with this structure G is 0, then this is equivalent to And if it's not, then I have to do something else, which I was hoping to tell you about. Let me see if I have the time. All right, then. So then I want to look at the underlying map of differential cohomology theories. So a D minus one-dimensional manifold plus some geometric structure like a metric and plus possibly some other data. This gives me a point. Oh, here, let me say it like this. Suppose I have a family of these. A family of D minus 1 manifolds parameterized by some space S with a little bit of extra geometric structure. So plus, say, a metric along the fibers. Etc. Some kind of geometric structure. This gives me an element, a differential function from S into this Bordism space in dimension minus D. And then I minus D minus 1. And then I compose with this map. And that gives me a map into the space I tilde 1, the 1 space in that spectrum. And just up here, I told you that that cohomology group is, I can think of as a smooth, so this data is the same thing as a smooth function from S into U1. So I get out of this integer invariant in dimension D, plus possibly a little bit of extra information, which is only in the case this is non-zero, I get for families of D minus 1 manifolds functions from the parameter space into U1. And if I did it with D minus 2, I'd get a graded U1 bundle with connection on S. And these would have all the, you know, the relationships. If I had a D minus 1 manifold with boundary, I'd get a nowhere vanishing section of this bundle, and things would glue just like they're supposed to in field theories. So this is supposed to be an abstract source of topological field theories that come out of an integer-valued cobordism invariant. And I'm just indicating that the topology is requiring you to make a little bit of an extra choice. You have to refine this integer invariant to a map like this. And then you get this kind of field theory. So this is a very general story. And now, in the remaining time, I just want to tell you how it works in the cases that I was considering. So let's go back to this case of let's go back to this case where we had a four-dimensional spin C manifold. And now, and I want to look at the expression C cubed minus P1, C cubed over 8 minus P1 over 24. And then we called this kappa of C. And then I also looked at kappa of, I considered changing the spin C structure. And that's x squared minus x C over 2. So I'm going to produce this integer invariant now just algebraically in such a way that it will generalize, it'll tell me how to generalize to higher dimensions. So this, let me write this function as q of x. and notice that Q of x plus y minus Q of x minus Q of y is xy. So Q is a quadratic refinement of the intersection pairing. Now, let's just step back and think about this in the abstract. Let's suppose I have a lattice, and you know, L with a non-degenerate bilinear form. So I'm thinking of L as the middle cohomology of my spin C manifold with integer coefficients modulo torsion. And what data do I need to write down a quadratic refinement of the intersection pairing? Well, the first thing you need to do is point out there's a little bit of extra structure. The map from L into Z mod 2, which sends x to xx mod 2, is linear. So by the non-degeneracy of this, this is of the form x c bar for some c bar in L tensor Z mod 2. In our spin C case, C bar will be the second Stiefel-Whitney class. And so C is just a choice, is some element that reduces to C bar mod 2. And this is, C is called a characteristic element. Of the quadratic form. And then there's a theorem, a basic theorem about quadratic forms, that C squared minus the signature of L is divisible by 8. And in fact, if I go back to this, this is the same as, C squared minus P1 over 3. Well, let's just write it as P minus L over 8, where this is the Hirzebruch L polynomial. So that tells you how to do this in general. If I want to define and then x squared minus xc, that's divisible by 2. That's a quadratic refinement. So all these things go together. Quadratic refinements of the cup product are in one-to-one correspondence with characteristic elements. And a characteristic element has this, the norm of a characteristic element has this magic relationship with the signature of a lattice. So that tells us how to do it in general. So now suppose I'm interested in a manifold of dimension 4k, and let's suppose it's oriented. Then the characteristic element on the 2k cohomology is called the Wu class. And it's characterized by x squared is x mu 2k mod 2. At least when m's connected, otherwise I have to integrate over the components. So the extra data we need is a choice. And in the case when k is 1, this is the second Stiefel-Whitney class. And what we need is a characteristic element, so we need to augment M by a choice. We need to equip M So let's think how we do that. I would take the classifying space for oriented vector bundles. We would represent the universal Wu class by a map to an Eilenberg-MacLane space and lift it. And let's call this BSO. Let's just write it like this. So this is a kind of maneuver that was studied by Browder in his investigation of the Kerr invariant. And so the appropriate, so if I have a manifold, and this is a map classifying its normal bundle, and it comes equipped with a lift of its structure group to here, then it automatically comes equipped with a cohomology, the cocycle lifting the 2k Wu class. And when k is equal to 1, then this is B spin C, and this is BSO. So this is just generalizing the notion of a spin C structure. Okay, so now I've defined for you then, this piece of algebra defines for you a map from pi 4k of MSO into Z. And out of this, I'm running out of time. I would need a little bit more data to make this correspond to a map. Into here, but if I do that, I would get a story, a field theory built out of a higher dimensional generalization of this. So I meant to get through this much quicker, so let me just say in words a couple of quick remarks about this. This is really an old story. It isn't quite in this language, but this is equivalent to an old story in surgery theory. And in fact, the extra data needed for this let me call that 2 as opposed to 1. Was defined by Milgram. And it's also done in a paper of Morgan and Sullivan. In the 70s, I think, sort of quite some time ago. That was in connection to calculating the surgery obstruction. So there's but in our case, in the case of interest in physics, the case we were interested in, this would be the spin group. And the Wu class we're interested in is actually the fourth Stiefel-Whitney class, which already does have an integer lift. It's this characteristic class. It's the second Chern class, it's often called half of P1 or lambda. So there already is a lift. So this pullback is just the spin group cross KZ4. And the Tom spectrum of that is sometimes written as M spin smash KZ4 plus. So the analog of this Tom spectrum in the case that was of interest in the connection with the 5 brain is this. And in that case, you can just calculate that the homotopy group pi 7 in that case is 0. So there's no extra data. I mismanaged the time. I was going to kind of... There's some more beautiful things I could tell you about this story, but I also wanted to get into the story of the cubic function. But...
No extra data needed to write the answer.
Say what?
No extra data needed for what?
To write 2.
And why is that?
Well, in that case, yeah, so for spin manifolds, for just if I just had an oriented manifold with a lift with this Wu structure, I think I do need some extra data. But in the case of spin manifolds, I don't. I could use instead the fact that every seven-dimensional spin manifold with an integer with a four cocycle bounds.
Does this imply that therefore you can write this action
test? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just from this purely algebraic story. So I want to give everyone a rest before the next talk. So I think I'll just, I was going to explain the analog of this for the cubic function. So this is a joint work discussion, something with Dan Fried. But we, motivated by Terry Wall's classification of simply connected six manifolds, we undertook, and the questions of Greg, we undertook to analyze the cubic analog of this. So so we did an analog of this algebraic story. For cubic forms. And again, in the case of interest in M theory, where I have now, so in the case of interest in M theory, the cobordism theory is, so for the M theory action, the cobordism theory is again just has to do with, is this thing I'm calling M spin smash KZ4. But now I'm interpreting it as the cobordism group again of spin manifolds equipped with an integer lift of the fourth Wu class. And in that case, we almost have the analog of the Milgram result that would give us this in general, but just like in this case, there's this result of Stong that this group is, that's zero, and so I don't need to give you any extra information to refine this integer invariant to what I would want in topology. So in other words, out of sort of a little bit of topology and a computation, you can just using pure algebra produce this this term in the action and this field theory kind of data, this topological field theory associated to the cubic form in dimension 11. That's that Greg and Emmanuel and Witten and Dan were getting out of E8 index theory. So you can do this just with pure algebra. It has some advantages and disadvantages. There's much less geometry going into the story, even though we get, because of the theory of differential function spaces, we get the same kind of geometry coming out. But you don't have as good a kind of control over what's going into it. So that's a weakness. On the other hand, this is really a story about the Eilenberg-MacLane space instead of the classifying space for E8. And this Eilenberg-MacLane space is a loop space. And I guess I can just say this story is a little more flexible and it'll apply to geometric situations, I think, where the fact that where you won't be able to use E8 index theory because the classifying space of E8 isn't a group, and this is a group. All right, but I think I'll quit here instead of spelling this out and give us all a rest. And like I said, next time I'm starting a new topic, so.
write an action for any journal on cohomology?
I mean, I think if I... Yeah, I think if I haven't... I guess what I'm saying is that I can get actions when I have maps from... That was the general picture, that if all I need is an integer-valued cobordism invariant, and then I can get... I can tend to write...
What I'm wondering is, what would this action be for a cohomology?
Well, I'll have to contemplate that. I'm going to say a little bit about that. I'm going to ask you something about that when I talk about it. So, yeah. There are some interesting ones that come up in elliptic cohomology that produce relationships between geometric objects. I don't know how to see otherwise. So, I'll... yeah. Any further questions? Let's thank the speaker again. Why am I doing this?